Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week, we present Dr. William Pierce's concluding thoughts on why he wrote his novel, The Turner Diaries. In the prior three parts of this series, intended for readers and listeners who have had their interest in the Turner Diaries sparked by the recent Hollywood propaganda film, The Order, Dr. Pierce told us of how he worked for many years, publishing news articles, analysis, research reports on the Jewish power structure, all having minimal effect on the downward trajectory of our nation and civilization. On today's show, I use AI to put his further thoughts, written near the end of his life, into audio form in his own voice. In the 1970s, Dr. Pierce tried two new methods of outreach and effecting change. A legal battle in which he unsuccessfully sued the United States government for its illegal acts in supporting the rogue state of Israel, and his creation of his first action novel, The Turner Diaries, which was never meant as a blueprint for anything, as the Jewish media claim, but instead as an extrapolation of the trends that Dr. Pierce was seeing in American society in 1975, a few decades into the future, a prophecy, if you will, and also a warning of the disastrous consequences that would ensue if patriots did not reassert control and take power away from the Jewish minority, which was leading us to racial and societal destruction. Get your own copy of the Turner Diaries and see if its fictional, worldwide, violent conflagration makes any sense at all as a blueprint, or if it is really more of an apocalyptic warning to us, urging us to radically change course as a nation, to prevent such a terrible and risky scenario. It's available in printed form, and also as an audiobook read by Dr. Pierce himself at our Cosmotheist bookstore, cosmotheistchurch.org/shop. That's cosmotheistchurch, all one word, .org/shop. On next week's show, we'll hear Dr. Pierce directly address the topic of Robert Matthews and his silent brotherhood, and we'll also hear from Bob Matthews himself. These are the words of Dr. William Luther Pierce. Listen.
Well, I kept preaching, and I continued to develop new media for my message: radio, the internet, magazines, video. The response to my message grew, but very slowly. I tried every way that I could to stress the importance of what I was saying. I used very emphatic language, sometimes shocking language. I didn't want to risk losing credibility by exaggerating, but I did try hard to catch people's attention and make them think about what I was saying. And I did more than just talk and publish. One subject I had preached long and hard about from the beginning was the danger of the United States continuing to provide military, financial, and diplomatic support for the gangster state of Israel. I warned that supporting Israel was not in accord with America's interests, that it was only making the people from whom we needed to purchase petroleum hate us, and we were getting nothing in return from Israel except contempt. Indeed, I put a great deal of effort into publicizing Israel's treacherous attempt in 1967 to sink the U.S. Navy ship, the USS Liberty, and kill the crew, so that the attack could be blamed on Egypt, against whom Israel was waging war at the time. Then in 1973, when Israel was involved in another war against both Egypt and Syria, I sued the U.S. Secretary of Defense in a federal court in an effort to block the illegal shipment of U.S. tanks, aircraft, and other weapons to Israel. I invited others to join me in this lawsuit. This was a concrete thing people could do. If the United States could be made to stay out of the war, then Israel would lose, and our Jewish problem in the Middle East would be solved. But in order to be effective, my lawsuit needed much support. It needed some big names behind it, so that the media couldn't ignore it. It needed a whole army of high-profile lawyers prosecuting it, so that the courts couldn't ignore it. And lawyers meant money, of course. The suit itself was on firm legal ground. The Secretary of Defense could not legally send U.S. tanks and planes to Israel without a specific authorization from the Congress, which he did not have. And the Jews needed the weapons immediately in order to avoid defeat by the Egyptians and the Syrians. Well, the big names that I wanted to associate with my lawsuit refused to come forward. They were much more concerned with not offending the Jews than with eliminating the festering sore in our side that was Israel. And neither the money nor the high-profile lawyers needed to make the federal court pay attention to my suit came forward. And so the Jewish Secretary of Defense, James Schlesinger, airlifted to Israel the weapons for which the Jews were clamoring. He drew down our military stockpiles in Europe to dangerously low levels in order to give Israel the weapons needed to defeat her neighbors. All of this was in the middle of the Cold War, when the U.S. defense of Western Europe against the Soviet Union was a serious matter. The Congress later gave Schlesinger the authorization to do what he had done after the fact, but when he began doing it, he lacked that authorization, and a strongly prosecuted lawsuit could have delayed the shipment of arms to Israel. I had put all of my own money into the effort to hold up the diversion of U.S. weapons to Israel at least long enough to give an advantage to Egypt and Syria, and no one would help me. Anyway, for my efforts, I had a valuable lesson in the way the judicial system works in America. It's not about justice and right and the law. It's all about power and money. And I also had yet another reminder of what I already had learned about the lack of any real sense of responsibility, even among thinking Americans. I'm sure that many of those who refused to help me with my lawsuit in 1973 thought of themselves as patriots. They just didn't take seriously my warning about the dangerous consequences for America of continuing to permit the U.S. government to support Israel's aggression against her neighbors. In 1975, I tried a new medium for my message. I wrote this novel, The Turner Diaries. I looked at the trends I saw in 1975, the increasing meddling of the government in people's lives, the increasing effort by the government to control not only what people did with their own resources, but also what they said and thought. The increasing favoritism shown to non-white minorities by the government, the increasing compulsion toward mixing of the races in the schools, in the workplace, in residential neighborhoods, and the growing alienation of the white population, the growing tendency to shrug off any sense of responsibility, to withdraw into oneself, and to seek only one's own pleasure and comfort while everything else went to hell. I looked at these trends, and I tried to project them ahead 20 years. I tried to imagine what life in America would be like in the 1990s. And the book was successful beyond my wildest dreams. No major publisher would touch the book, of course, and I had to publish it myself. After it was published, bookstores wouldn't carry it, and reviewers wouldn't review it. I had to advertise it and sell it myself, and despite all the obstacles, it sold like hot dogs at a ball game. I was amazed. Hundreds of thousands of people bought the book and liked it and told their friends about it. It was translated into German and French and Swedish and Polish and Romanian. Some governments even went to the trouble to ban the book. But for a quarter century, all the way through the 1990s, people still wouldn't do anything. People read my book as escapist fiction because they enjoyed the action I wrote about. But almost no one really took it seriously until very recently. The book was too far-fetched to be taken seriously. It didn't seem real. They couldn't imagine that the projection of the future that I made back in 1975 ever could come to pass in America. After all, I wrote about an America with a much more repressive government than Americans ever had experienced. I wrote about an armed uprising against the government by white patriots. I wrote about domestic terrorism on a huge scale. I wrote about patriots using truck bombs to blow up government buildings, about patriots obtaining nuclear weapons and then putting one in an airplane and flying it into the Pentagon on a suicide mission. It just didn't seem real. Readers enjoyed it, but they didn't take it seriously. And it wasn't just the action in the Turner Diaries they didn't take seriously. They thought that my message was too extreme. They thought that I was being excessively harsh in my portrayal of governmental corruption and of treason by the politicians. Things are bad, they agreed, but not as bad as I had portrayed them. They thought that the racism and anti-Semitism of the characters in the book were too fanatical. They thought that the ethnic cleansing that was described in the book was unnecessarily bloody and cruel. They thought all these things until very recently. Now I am detecting a changing attitude toward my book on the part of the most perceptive and most independent-minded readers. The attitude of the Lemmings hasn't changed at all, of course. They're not about to be seen reading the Turner Diaries because their TV has told them that it's a very politically incorrect book, a very hateful book. But thinking people are looking at it again and reconsidering their initial judgment that it is too extreme, too unrealistic. They have seen too many of the things that I wrote about in 1975 come to pass. Or at least, they are seeing persuasive indications now that some of the far-fetched things I wrote about may come to pass soon. And it's not just the Turner Diaries that they're reevaluating now. They're rethinking everything that they had taken for granted before. They are taking things seriously now that they didn't pay much attention to before. Until very recently, most Americans, even thinking Americans, didn't take the government's foreign policy very seriously because it seemed too far from home. They didn't believe that what the government did overseas could have much effect on their personal comfort or security. Now they understand that it can. In September 2001, it was brought home to them that a bad foreign policy can have disastrous consequences right here in America. My organization, the National Alliance, aims to increase this growing understanding among thinking people, among people who can make a difference. The difficulties we face in doing this are primarily economic difficulties. We should have our radio program, American Dissident Voices, on every station in America, but airtime is expensive. We would like for every adult white person in America to read the Turner Diaries, but so far only about 250,000 have. We need to expand our outreach greatly and reach many more of our people with our message, but that will require many more helpers working with us, and it will require much more money. We are slowly doing what needs to be done, but we could do it much faster with more help. Fortunately, we gradually are getting additional help, but we need much, much more. Too many patriots think we can fix the system in Washington, and they spend their time and money working to reform it or trying to elect candidates who they think will reform it. Helping such people see reality is one reason I wrote this book. Imagine that you are a doctor and you have two hospital beds before you. In one bed is an old man of mixed race whose health has been ruined from a lifetime of depraved living, an old man riddled with AIDS and a dozen other incurable and infectious diseases. In the other bed is a healthy white infant. You should not waste your time working to make the old man healthy again by trying to undo what cannot be undone. The thing to do is pull the plug on his life support system before his disease has a chance to sicken the healthy white infant in the other bed, and then to devote all of your energy and skill and resources to ensuring that the infant stays healthy, that he doesn't grow up to lead a life like the old man did and fall prey to the same diseases. That can be done. That is something which is possible. Now, the choice facing the ordinary American of goodwill today is not quite that simple, but there are strong similarities. What we need to do is stop worrying about undoing the awful, mixed-up mess our enemies have made. Instead, let's let the process of self-destruction proceed as quickly as it will, so that it is finished before it has infected the lives of all of our people. We can't stop it anyway. I mean, what can you do with a city like New York or Washington except try to keep it from spreading by whatever means are necessary? What can you do with a political system like the one in Washington except encourage it to even further excess? Let's not waste our time and energy trying to undo what cannot be undone. Let's pull the plug and focus all of our efforts on salvaging what is still healthy and then ensuring that it stays healthy. That can be done. That is something which is possible. Let the fire which is coming take care of New York and Washington. Let's try to show as many healthy people as we can how to keep from becoming infected and then how to avoid being burned when the fire comes. Let's show them how to avoid becoming discouraged by enemy propaganda. While the controlled media gloat over the rising rate of racial intermarriage and over the rising number of white families adopting black children and over the darkening of America from the non-white immigration flood, let us keep pointing out to people the numbers that show the declining level of support for this rotten system. While the enemy rejoices over the new destruction he is accomplishing, let us rejoice over the new people whose eyes are being opened by this destruction, and let us reach out to these people and bring them into the community the National Alliance is building. Let us realize that we cannot save everything. We cannot save what has become sick and corrupted. But we can save many of those who are still healthy and who are repelled by the sickness. Let us do a better and better job of that, because in that is our hope for the future.